Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio. Coming to you since 1997 on KKUP Radio with over 250 guests and still going strong in their 12th year of weekly broadcasting, the International Taz and Paula Show brings to you expansive, engaging, and groundbreaking intensity on radio and now on the internet airwaves today. Listen live every Thursday or visit Embracing Mother Earth's archives, exclusive articles, ask questions, and receive actual answers from guests anytime at TazandPaulaShow.com. Taz and Paula's special guests are experts coming from all walks of life, energizing our lives with a passion that inspires and teaches us with each of their compelling personal life journeys, with roots from ancient wisdom and bridging it with modern science. We hope today's show touches the wisdom of your heart. And now, Taz and Paula.
Well, our guest today says, human race, get off your knees. We are definitely in for a roller coaster ride with David Icke today, and I think we have a roller coaster ride in the future. You are now listening to the International Taz and Paula Show, and I'm Paula.
And I'm Taz. Wow, I'm talking about roller coasters. I'm not sure what end that David Icke starts on, whether the end or the top, but boy, I'm telling you, hang on, folks. I wonder which side of this roller coaster we're really going to start on today. This Saturday, our guest, David Icke, is at the Marin Center all the way from the United Kingdom, sharing his incredible latest 2010 book, Human Race, Get Off Your Knees, and marking this day-long intensive workshop with highlights that will awaken you like nothing has before. Startling, remarkable, and highly controversial are just a few of the terms commonly used to describe this internationally acclaimed author from the United Kingdom. David Icke is a researcher that uncovers secrets, astounding secrets, and previously suppressed information with his 2010 publication of Human Race, Get Off Your Knees.
Well, David takes the manipulation of the human race and the nature of reality to higher levels of understanding as he calls for humanity to rise from its knees and take back the world from the sinister network of families and non-human entities that covertly control us from cradle to grave. His most staggering revelation is that the earth and the collective human mind is manipulated from the moon, which he says is not a heavenly body, but an artificial construct, a gigantic spacecraft, probably a hollowed-out planetoid, which is home to the extraterrestrial group that has been manipulating humanity for eons. Well, David, thank you for taking the time to be with us today. Hope you still are not in jet lag.
No, thank you, Paula. Taz, having read that, listened to that, and did I do all that? I can't believe it. When did I do that?
How many years old are you?
Yeah. What, me controversial? Oh, my goodness. No one's ever said that before.
Oh, I bet. Well, you know, what I was kind of curious about before we really start in what we just talked about is your trip to Africa while you were filming and what happened to you there and how you got engaged with the children there and helping them.
Well, a long time ago now, it seems, about 1997, 98, I went to speak in South Africa for the first time, and I met a man called Credo Mutwa, who is a high Zulu shaman. He's coming up to his 90th year now. And I'd published a book about that time called The Biggest Secret. And he read it and contacted me when I was there because he said, how did you get this information? Because he said, this is what I've been told through like 50 odd years of being in the shamanistic stream and therefore getting access to information that's passed over from generation to generation in Africa by the shamans. And we became very, very, very close friends. And unfortunately, to a very large extent, you've got people in places like America and Britain who've taken the if you like, the Western route to success of materialism and all that stuff. And a lot of people have had that experience and found it wanting. Unfortunately, in some of the or many of the developing countries, they still see that because of the global media and Hollywood and all the rest of it as the target, as what to aspire to. And a lot of them have turned away from the shamanistic past and the wisdom of the past. And so Credo is looking around, or was, to see who he could pass it on to, because in many, many ways he is the end of the line. Not completely, but of his type, I would say so. And so he started talking to me, and we started getting it down on tape as much as we could. And I went out there in August with a guy called Bill Ryan, who's been involved in something called Project Camelot, and he did the filming. And we spent 2 weeks with him, just every day getting as much down as we could. And one of the things he's been, because he's an amazing man, you know, he's ill, he's frail now, he's like I say, he's coming up to his 90th year, but every day that man gets up and says, what can I do for my people? Because that, he says, is my responsibility as the high shaman. And so he is, and with his wife, trying to open a hospital right next to his house in the Kalahari district to treat sufferers of AIDS and child abuse, because they're not getting treatment. And this will sound staggering, but what he's told me is true. One of the reasons there's an unbelievable amount of child abuse in South Africa is because from outside it was put into the country to circulate that if you had AIDS, you could be cured from it by having sex with a child. And so it suddenly started to explode, and he looks after a number of children who've been abused. And so he's trying to get this place together. And when I went out there, I was shocked at how much he'd already done. It's about three-quarters ready, and we're just trying to raise the money to complete it and for some running costs, so that people with AIDS and child abuse, but with AIDS, can be treated in a natural way. He's got a herbal potion that comes from ancient knowledge, which he says has tremendous effect on keeping people alive for far longer than they normally would. But they're like, it's like lepers. You become a leper if you have AIDS in parts of Africa, and you know you're like shunned. And this hospital is to not just treat people physically, but give them some love and respect. It's a wonderful project. If people go to my website, davidike.com, they can contribute to it.
Hmm. Wow!
When you talk about him, I just get chills.
Yeah,
he's an extraordinary man. You know, during the apartheid years, he was living in Soweto, this massive township outside of Johannesburg. And one of the Pretoria newspapers, a white-owned newspaper, an apartheid newspaper, misquoted him as saying something. And the black groups in Soweto, staggeringly, took the quote and believed it, even though it was wrong. And they turned up in large, large numbers at his home in Soweto. Young people, they beat him senseless and kicked him on the floor. Then they poured petrol over him, and someone lit a torch to set fire to him. And it was then someone else shouted, "Leave him, don't do that." He was like seconds from being burnt alive. That man got up, recovered eventually, and started working for the benefit of his people again. You know, it's just an extraordinary, extraordinary, extraordinary man.
So are you writing a book about the story of his life? And
Well, what we're doing is we just kind of filmed everything that moved for 2 weeks, because, you know, it was so funny. I mean, this man can talk. We were starting one day, and you know, Bill said the usual thing, Credo, you know, can you just say anything you like, just so we can get the voice levels right on the microphone? And he proceeded to talk for 2 hours without coming up for breath, you know. An amazing man. He's got this incredible library of knowledge. He can tell you what this means in that language and how this word is the same in this language, and how he came to the Hopi lands and could understand 3 of every 5 words that they said, because in the ancient world there was much, much more interaction than official history ever says. It was a much more of a global society than we're led to believe. And his brilliance in understanding languages and the origin of languages, it uncovers and connects some incredible dots between, apparently, according to official history, never connected people. But that's not true. And what we're doing is, to very quickly answer that question, is what we're going to do is turn all that stuff into a series of DVDs, like the Credo Library, Credo Mutwa, library, and also transcribe it eventually into books. It takes a long time, but that's what we're going to do, because this man's knowledge has to remain, has to be passed on, because he's an extraordinary man. And you know, it's kind of funny because, you know, all around the world there are these ancient cultures that to an extent have carried this ancient knowledge. We see it in North America, we see it in Asia, we see it in South America. But one place that's been kind of ignored to such an extent is Africa. And my goodness, what knowledge there is to pick up there, ancient knowledge, not just of esoterics and reality, but also about the real history of the human race. And it's no accident that, you know, the presumption is that at least modern humanity as we know it now came out of Africa. It's an incredible place, and it's just been ignored. But fortunately, thanks to Credo and giving him a platform, it's being understood more, just what there is to find there.
What a lovely journey. This is, you know, David, it's amazing. I look at you and I say, you know, I see where you've gone, and I really wonder, as a child, as a youngster, what was there anything that propelled you into wanting to do this kind of work that you're doing?
Well, it's a kind of a long story. I'll try to keep it short. When I was a small boy, from the moment I, you know, can remember becoming conscious, if you like, I felt I was here to do something. I started getting involved when I was a youngster in soccer, and I became a professional soccer player. And I thought, well, this must be what I need to do. But my soccer playing career ended with rheumatoid arthritis at the age of 21, and I went into journalism, and then I joined the BBC. And then I became a national spokesman for the Green Party in the 1980s in Britain. And this thing never left me. I'm here to do something, but I didn't know what it was. And all these things that I kept doing, I thought, is this it? And I thought, no, it's not. And then in 1989 year, I felt whenever I was in a room alone, I was not alone. And it got more and more powerful as the year unfolded, to the point where I was sitting on a hotel room bed in London, in Kensington Hilton Hotel, working for the BBC in about March 1990. And I looked into the room and I just said, if there's something there, would you please contact me? Because you're driving me up the wall. And a few days later, I'm in a newspaper shop, bookshop near my home in England. And I'm at the door, and I said to my son, who was just reading some books, a little boy, he's a big 27-year-old singer-songwriter now, but I said, come on, guys, we'll go and get some lunch up the town. And as I turned to move, my feet wouldn't move. They were like, it was like they were anchored to the ground. And all I heard going through my mind, it wasn't like a voice, it was a very strong thought form. It said, go and look at the books on the far side. And I'm a television presenter at this time and national spokesman for the Green Party and not into any of this. And I was in a totally bewildered state. What on earth is going on? And I walked across in days. And in among the romantic novels was this book called Mind to Mind by a psychic called Betty Shine. And I turned it over and I read the blurb, saw the word psychic, and saw she was British. And I thought, I wonder if I saw her, if she would pick up what the heck I've been feeling in, you know, around me in these empty rooms, apparently empty rooms. So I went to see her a couple of times. And what I said to her was, because of the arthritis, and I didn't want to give anything away and lead her into anything, so I said, look, I want to come for hands-on healing, which she also did, because of my arthritis. But my real feeling was, would she pick it up? And I went a couple of times, and we had nice chats about other dimensions. All made sense to me. And then I went the third time, and I'm lying on this, like, bench. She's working just off my left knee. And suddenly, I felt a spider's web on my face, kind of cobweb feeling. And I remembered immediately, she'd said that in a book, sometimes you feel that when something's trying to lock into you. And I never said a word. I just thought, oh, my God, I read that. And this is what was in her book. And about 10 or 15 seconds later, she launches her head back, and she says, my God, this is powerful. I've got to close my eyes for this one. And so this is March 1990, 20 years ago this year, and she started saying, I'm seeing a figure in my mind, and it's asking me to tell you things. The first thing she said was, they're saying that they know you wanted them to contact you, but the time wasn't right. This was a reference to the hotel room, which she knew nothing about at all. And then she said, they're saying you're going to go out on a world stage. Eventually, you're going to be world famous. You're going to face enormous opposition, but they would always be there to protect you, and you're going to reveal great secrets. They also said something that's very, very significant today, and something I'll be talking about. Well, I'll be talking about everything on Saturday at the Marin Center, but this is a real powerful theme of the moment. Yeah, there is a vibrational change coming, which is going to wake humanity up from its hypnotic coma. And it's going to bring to the surface all that's been hidden from humanity. Now, 20 years ago, there's no evidence at all. But look at it now. I mean, the stuff we know now, we never knew 2 years ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago. It's amazing. And, you know, I've been to 51 countries now. And I'm being invited to new ones all the time, like the Czech Republic a few weeks ago. There is a global awakening going on. You know, what I was told 20 years ago, it's happening. The first book I wrote after that initial kind of awakening, because it's an ongoing process, of course, I called truth vibrations. And that's what I call this energetic change, the truth vibrations. It's bringing the truth individually and collectively to the surface. And after that experience, I started writing this book, Truth Vibrations, and having other amazing synchronistic experiences through 1990. And then in early 1991, I had this massive urge to go to Peru. And I went there not knowing why I was going, purely on intuition. I've just got to go. Anyway, I was there 3 weeks, and amazing things happened. And I ended up climbing up a mound near a place called Siyustani, which is an old Inca ruin, about an hour and a half drive from a place called Puno, not far from Lake Titicaca. I walk up this mound out of a little tourist bus, which I'd hired with a driver and the tourist guide guy fella. And when I got up to the top, I had this urge, I must climb this mound. And I got up there, and I couldn't see it from the road, but there was a standing stone circle, very ancient, very ancient. And I walked into the middle of it, and it started again, like in the newspaper shop, in the bookshop. My feet started to burn as I stood in the center of the circle, and it was like magnets were pulling my feet down. And then I felt like a drill going into the top of my head and through my body, and another kind of energy coming up from the earth through my head. Then I heard two things in my mind out of nowhere. The first one said, it will be over when you feel the rain. And the second one was, the first one was, they'll be talking about this 100 years from now, and I'm thinking, talking about what? And by the way, it will be over when you feel the rain. It was a clear blue sky with a piercing Peruvian sun. Anyway, over the next period of best part of an hour, my feet won't move, and the energy going through me was like being plugged into a wall socket and then some. And after a while of going in and out of, like, consciousness, like when you're driving a car and you can't remember the last 2 miles, that sort of feeling, I noticed as this energy is coming through, my body's shaking by now, I noticed that over the distant mountains there was a light gray mist, and it very quickly became a dark gray mist, and I realized that it's raining. And over the next little while, it wasn't very long, this rainstorm comes out of the mountains, came closer and closer to me, covered the sun eventually, and it was coming towards me like a wall of stair rod rain. And by the time it got close, really close, I'm hanging on for life through this energy coming through me. And then eventually the rain hits me and everything stopped. And I staggered forward and trying to work out what the heck had gone on. It was all new to me. And that from that moment, it was like a dam burst in my mind. And all insights, concept, information just poured in. It was a bit like pressing too many keys on the computer too quickly. And basically for 3 months, my mind kind of froze. I couldn't process all this information. And I was in a totally bewildered state. And it was in that state that when I got back to Britain and Truth Vibrations came out, that I was on national primetime chat shows talking about it, what had happened to me, not understanding what had happened to me. You know, it's like, what's my name? What plan is this? And I got massive, massive ridicule in Britain, which with hindsight was a gift because it cleared me out of the fear of what other people think, which is the prison that most people live in. And after about 3 months, the computer unfroze, and people were saying, I thought you'd gone crazy, mate. You're the same bloke I used to know. Well, I was on the surface, but not in any other way. I was seeing the world in a completely different way, in a way I couldn't see it before. I could see how dots connected. I could see how the manipulation worked, how what people were saying is one thing, but what they were really saying was quite another. And the process started of extraordinary, constant, synchronistic coincidences, which have led me over the last 20 years to people, experiences, books, documents, pieces in the puzzle, basically, to put together what's happening in the world as opposed to what we think is happening. And the most crucial thing to understanding it, and my absolute passion above everything else, is the nature of reality. Who are we? Where are we? What is this world that we think is so physical, so solid, and so immovable?
Well, a lot of people are probably asking that question. You know, just what is reality, you know?
It's an illusion. I go into this on Saturday at the Marin Center and in my books in the first section. I do four sections. I speak from 10 in the morning to 8 in the evening in four sections with about 1,300 illustrations. And I go into the manipulation of everyday life, where it's going. I go into the non-human aspect to it. I go into the truth vibrations and the awakening of humanity in the last section, particularly, which is very, very important because it's happening. This is no myth. But in the first section, I deal for about 2 hours, 2.5 hours with the nature of reality because to understand at least the themes of that. There's so much more to know. I'm not sitting cross-legged on a mountain saying I've got all the answers. It's an ongoing journey. It's like Socrates supposed to have said in ancient Greece, wisdom is knowing how little we know. It keeps your mind open to all possibility. But the themes and much of the detail that I give about the nature of reality is vital, not only understanding life as we live it, but understanding how the conspiracy works, because this is one of the key areas that became very clear to me a long time ago now, and that is those not the George Bushes, not the Barack Obamas, you know, not the people you see like that, but the core group in the shadows that control those people. So as they say, well, open-minded Americans say, it doesn't matter who you vote for, the government still gets in. You know, do you want the front man called Bush or do you want front man called Obama? Because they're still controlled by the same people, and I show how in the event. But they know the basic nature of reality and how we interact with it, how we create our own reality, and by programming the way we perceive ourselves, by programming belief systems, etc., and perceptions, they can get us to create, decode reality in a way that suits their control system, i.e. get the people to decode reality, perceive reality as if they are little me, I'm just no Joe Public, I have no power, what can I do, right? And what we really are is infinite awareness, all that is, has been, and ever can be. And the very foundation of this whole global control system, which moves on all the time, further and further, deeper and deeper into this Orwellian state globally, is about the programming of human perception. There's a wonderful American comedian who died, I think it was about 1993, called Bill Hicks, a Texan. He used to do a lot of psychoactive drugs in his life, and so he saw that reality was illusory. And he had as part of a joke, but he was a very profound man behind all that. He said, matter is merely energy condensed to a slow vibration. We're all one consciousness experiencing itself subjectively. There's no such thing as death. Life is only a dream, and we are the imagination of ourselves. And what the control system is doing all the time, through many and various means, not least the mainstream media and what we bravely call the education system, it's programming humanity's imagination of itself to believe that it is impotent, it has no power, it is subordinate to those that are in power, and all that. It must acquiesce to the perception of who has the power. But when you get into the nature of reality, which, I mean, I'm sitting here, and I'm sitting at a table, and it seems ever so solid, but it can't be. It's made up of atoms, and atoms have no solidity. And the point I'm making is that the base foundation of this reality is not what we perceive as the physical world at all. It's a waveform energetic construct. The vibrational level is the key from which everything else becomes manifest. It's exactly the same principle as the wireless internet. In the wireless internet, I'm sitting in a hotel room now. It has the wireless internet. I'm looking around. Where is it? I can't see it. It's in the unseen. But in that unseen is a whole collective reality called the World Wide Web. And if I get my computer and I tune it to the information field of the wireless internet, I can pick up the same collective reality, the same websites that someone can in London now, in Los Angeles, in South Africa, in India, anywhere, apart from China, where they firewall it off and places like that. So what we're doing through what I call the body computer, because there's such a difference between the vehicle we use to experience this tiny range of frequency we call the physical world, and consciousness, which is experiencing this reality through that vehicle. And what the control system does by the way it controls information, it's constantly feeding us the idea that we are the five senses, that we are the reflection in the mirror, when that is the vehicle to experience. What we are is infinite awareness, infinite potential, all possibility, eternal awareness. And that state, of course, if we found it, more and more people are beginning to. How do a few control the many when the many are in that state? They have to put them in a low state of awareness and pull them, their point of attention, into the five senses, so that they are operating on a fraction of their multi-level, multi-dimensional, infinite awareness. And then a few can control the many, because they're controlling the perceptions of the many. And so we are decoding, like a computer, through what I call the body computer, the biological computer of the body, information which comes from the vibrational through the five senses, which turn it into the electrical. They send it to the brain. The brain then constructs reality into a digital and holographic reality, which only exists in our head, in our mind, in the brain, and the whole genetic structure, actually. So I'm sitting here now, and this room seems to have distance. It seems to have spatial the walls over there and the space. But what it actually is, that this room, in that sense, in that what I would call holographic, people perceive as physical sense, only exists in my head.
You're sitting in air.
Yeah, and I get deeply into this in the first section and explain how it all fits together. It's so logical and so simple and explains so many scientific anomalies that even quantum physicists can't understand. Why is this and why is that? It can't be, but it can when you realize what reality is. It has to be. For instance, this reality, including the human body, is holographic. The base foundation is vibrational information, but when it's decoded through into this expression, like the movie screen, it's holographic. And what holograms have is an amazing characteristic in which every part of the hologram is a smaller version of the whole. So when you get a holographic print, for instance, these holograms they make combine the shops, if you cut that holographic print into four and then fire the laser at a quarter part of that print, you do not get a quarter of the picture, the whole picture. You get a quarter-sized version of the whole picture. Every part of a hologram is a smaller version of the whole. And that's why reflexologists can find points on the foot and everywhere else that relate to different parts of the body. That's why acupuncture can find points on the ear, etc., that relate to every point, a part of the body. That has to be like that because it's holographic. Every part of the body is a smaller version of the whole. This is how palm reading works. In the hand, it's a smaller part of the whole, so it contains the information in a smaller way of the whole hologram, the whole body. And therefore, if you know what you're doing, you have to know that you can read things from the hand. We call it palm reading because the information is there because it's a hologram. This is why when you look at the human energy field, auric field, where the energy comes out of the top of the head and spills around on both sides, etc. That's why when you look at the Earth's energy field, you're basically looking at a mirror of the human energy field. It's because it's a hologram. Every part is a smaller version of the whole. And so many things start to fall into place when you realize what reality is. And if you know, because you've hoarded this knowledge and you've systematically kept it from the people, as they did when the colonial powers of Europe went into North America, South America, Africa, all the rest of it. They, in Credo Mutwa's words, they milked the minds of the shaman and then killed as many as they could. They wanted the knowledge, but they then wanted to give a false history, a false version of reality through what we bravely call science. They wanted to impose religions on these people, like Christianity, etc., which is used widely to put a block on the knowledge going any further. And because they know this, they realize that if you can program the human body computer mind to read reality, decode reality in the way that you want it, you can get them to manifest the reality you want. I'll give you a great example. When I was researching one of my books about all this, I went to a number of hypnotist stage shows and to just observe, and I saw people smelling things that weren't there. I saw people eating potatoes and tasting an apple, and you start to realize just how easy this is, because what happens is that when you eat, say, a potato, the taste buds sends an electrical signal to the brain. You taste it when the brain's decoded that signal. Now, if you can impose in the brain a belief system, this is what the hypnotists are doing, program it to believe that that signal is that of an apple, that's what it will decode, and that's what you will taste. And if you can program the brain to believe that there's a certain smell under the nose, it will manifest it. I've seen people in these shows be told there's a terrible, horrible smell just under their nose, and they have reeled back in horror at it. Nothing there, but the brain has been tricked into reading it. Now, you take that information on a simple thing like a hypnotist stage show, and you see the potential for mass control. When you control the mainstream media, you control the education of people and children from a very young age right through to, late teens and beyond. When the people that we interact with have all been through the same system. Therefore, they're confirming to you that what the system's saying is true. true because they've been programmed to believe it. It's like that famous saying: if you go to kindergarten and someone tells you 2 and 2 equals 5, and you go to to infant school 2 and 2 equals 5, you go to higher school 2 and 2 equals 5, you go to college and university 2 and 2 equals 5. The media is telling you 2 and 2 equals 5. Doctors are telling you 2 and 2 equals 5. Everyone around you is telling 2 and 2 equals 5 because they've been through the same system you're going through. And it's any wonder that people go through their lives thinking 2 and 2 equals 5, but it still equals 4. And that's what I'm doing is trying to get across that people are living in an illusory, manipulated, programmed reality that's programmed to give them a false self-identity that makes humanity controllable by the few. Everything that I do, whether it's information about the manipulation of the banking system or whatever, or it's reality or it's the truth vibrations, is all focused on saying, you are not who you think you are. You are not the limited potential you think you are. You are all that is, has been, and ever can be. And it is just a change of perception away.
Well, that's the reason why the ancient cultures were destroyed, because they already knew this. Is that true?
That's correct, yes. You see, what happened was I go into this in some detail in the new book and in the second section on Saturday. There was what the ancients call all around the world the Golden Age, which was a time of when this world was absolutely nothing like it is today. And when I read these accounts of what they call, some of them call the Golden Age, people lived long lives, and there was it's an amazing world compared with the one we live in. It always now reminds me of the world in the Avatar movie of the blue people, where everyone was connected to nature, and everything was connected to everything else, and they all moved as one unit because they knew everything was connected. And indeed, the Avatar movie is very, very symbolic in another way, in that the humans that arrive looking for resources that are very valuable in their high-tech, murderous, mass-killing weaponry and ships, etc., something like that happened to the Earth. That mentality came in. There was a massive upheaval. It led to what all the ancient cultures talk about. Indeed, you can find it in Genesis, of course. The great geological upheavals and a massive tidal wave. And I explain in the talk how that came about and in the book. And it changed. It basically wiped away the previous civilization and society on Earth, when it was a global society. And as the Earth settled down from these catastrophes, a new society, a new humanity was gradually emerging. And it's the sedated human. It's not the human that was there before. It's the sedated human. It's the human in a state of slavery. Because we forgot, well, I say we, whether we're here or not, it's consciousness, but humanity forgot what it knew before. And what's emerging now, re-emerging through these truth vibrations, is, even though I talk for 8 hours, and my latest book is 355,000 words with like 300 illustrations, I'm not telling anyone something they don't already know at a deep level. And one of the reasons this information is so powerful is because you are not saying, this is new to you. At some deep level, everyone knows it, and it's just teasing that open, that memory, the deep insiders of what the story was and who we really are. It's a fantastic time to be alive because we're just entering a new epoch of massive consciousness expansion and a wonderful new world of awareness, and we're at the cusp, and it's a very interesting time to be here because we've still got the old energy, which is the foundation of the control system and the Orwellian state, that's now trying to throw everything it can at us to try to stop us awakening to this stuff, because it knew it was coming. If I knew 20 years ago it was coming, my goodness, how long has the control system known? And they've targeted this time with their food additives and their drink additives and their electromagnetic pollution and all this stuff, which is destabilizing the human body computer, which is a chemical, electrochemical organism on one level. And if you destabilize it, and you can destabilize it through stress, through fear, all this stuff, then it's not going to read reality to the full extent that it potentially could. And that's why there's a war on the human body and the human immune system, et cetera, going on now. But it's this cusp where the epoch of suppression and limitation and ignorance that comes from that is being replaced by one of massive consciousness expansion. But at the moment, we're living in both worlds. The truth vibrations are emerging more and more, and they're triggering and awakening more and more people. My goodness, do I see that around the world. But still, the vast majority are connected to the old epoch of reality. But this truth vibrations transformation will move on and get faster and faster, and eventually there'll become a tipping point and this control system's coming down. You know, it's like people see it, and I completely understand, as getting more and more powerful by the day and taking more and more over more and more of the fine detail of our lives every day. Yes, and it is in that level. But what we're seeing is not the start of a massive global fascist state running on through future generations. We're looking at a dying epoch throwing its last cards, and when you corner a rat, it thrashes out. So we're going to have everything thrown at us in the next few years. We need to meet the challenge and just continue doing what we're doing, because in the end, in my lifetime, this tipping point's going to come, and I'm 58 now.
Well, we can't wait. But the more of the people that get in tune, the easier the next level, the next group of people can come in. And is that true, like the 100th monkey?
Yeah, I mean, the generations alive today are the snowplow, those that are playing a part in this. In those very early days, just after I met that first psychic and realized something strange is going on in my life, I met another one, because I met a lot in those early days, not now, but then. And she said, I'm being told to tell you this, you are like a snowplow. You're making space for others to make it easier who come behind. So we, the generations who are doing this now, we're going through the snowdrift. We're going through the barrier. We're going through the barriers that are put up there to stop us expanding and becoming who we truly are, and that allows other people behind, coming through, younger people, to go through that space. And once the old control systems come down, of course we have to create a new society. And as Einstein said, you cannot solve problems with the same level of consciousness that created them, and that's what we've been doing through this epoch of suppression and control. We've been having politicians and business people and doctors and scientists replacing other business people, doctors and scientists, you know, what we call elections or through the generations, and they've been of the same consciousness level, the same perception level, and therefore nothing's changed, it's just got worse. But now we're moving into this consciousness expansion, then that will manifest as a very, very different world to the one we have today, because the world is a reflection of collective humanity's perceptions and therefore what comes from that behavior. And that is going to change. It's already changing among gathering numbers of people. And, you know, when I first started on this journey and I realized the scale of the control system and how it was controlling all facets of global life, really, that have any effect on human slavery. I thought, well, crikey, what about my kids and my grandkids? You know, what was going to happen to them? But what I see now is they're going to have some challenges, because this epoch is cusp is moving, and they're going to be affected by those challenges, but they're not going to live in an Orwellian global state. It's coming down. They're going to live increasingly, especially the younger ones, in a world that we sitting here now would not even recognize. It's going to be a world that we would like to live in, as opposed to one currently that most people exist in and seek to survive another week in.
How do your children take this, Ike? David?
Well, I, you know, a lot of them, you know, work with me in England in the publishing of my books and everything. But you see, they were around, or at least most of them were. My youngest son, 17, they were around 20 years ago when all hell broke loose, and they've seen how what I've been saying and what was in my books 15 years ago and more is now on the daily news. And so because they're close to it, they see how it is panning out and give me tremendous, tremendous support. But I'm not someone who tries to persuade them of anything. You know, I think we need to respect children and young people in the sense of giving them their right without pressure, without seeking to make them a clone of us, because it suits us, without imposing our belief systems and our will and our version of reality upon them. We must, you know, take a deep breath, take a step back, and let them have the freedom to come to their own conclusions. And if they're the same as the parents, well, fair enough. But if they're not, well, that's fair enough as well. You know, it's all right talking about freeing humanity from collective slavery and imposition. But the collective is just a collective expression of the individual. And, you know, if we believe in freedom, then we believe in freedom in all expressions, not just that suits us. You know, we believe in the right of someone to say something we fundamentally disagree with. Because if they don't have the right to say that, then we're not free to have our own opinion. We're only free in that world to have the opinion that is allowed by the state. So, you know, someone saying something that we fundamentally disagree with, even might abhor, is an expression of our own freedom, our own right to say what we want to say, unfettered, without censorship. And it's the same with parents. If people want to live in a collectively free world, well, we need to set ourselves free, and we need to set our kids free and let them have the full range of possibility and information to make their minds up, not just feed them that which will lead them to believe a certain perception that suits us. Freedom does not have limits in the sense of, well, we want to be free from the manipulation of the banks, but I don't want my children to be free from the imposition of the parents. Well, you know, come on, freedom's freedom. Get used to it.
Well, I know if 20 years ago when I started hearing all of this, there was really a thought in my mind, yeah, right. But as the years or in the 20 years evolved, I saw it happening right in front of my eyes.
Yes, it's an amazing time to be alive. You know, there was no one on another level, you know, with an AK-47 saying to us in our conscious state, "Get in that body or I shoot." There's a big difference between what I call body mind. That's like the computer system that connects us to this reality and allows us to experience it, and consciousness. When people have near death experiences and they experience their awareness moving and their point of attention moving beyond the body, they experience a vastly, vastly different perception of reality. Instead of having one thought and one point of attention, they have multiple thoughts, multiple points of attention, all happening at the same time in a fantastic expansion of consciousness. And that level makes the decision about what it wants to come to experience. It's the body-mind level, the conscious mind, if you like, that's then trying to understand from its limitation, because it's working through a lens, through this what I call body computer, to try to work out why it made this choice. Because, you know, you'd say to people in many and various situations around the world, no one forced you to come and experience this. And they said, well, I would never have chosen. Well, that level of you that's saying that was not that which chose. And there is a perception. You see, it's an analogy I use. Our infinite awareness what people connect through to through intuition and all the rest of it. It can see the journey from the source of the river to the sea. The conscious mind can see the river from where it is to the next turn. And they're two completely different perceptions of the same situation. And what changed my life 20 years ago, apart from all that stuff that went on, is that I decided that if I was going to, if I was ever in conflict again between my heart, my intuitive knowing, and my head, thought, thinking, it's a very low level of awareness thinking. We think it's so, we worship the intellect, and nothing wrong with the intellect. It helps us to interact with this world, but to think that it's the governor of wisdom is ludicrous. Some of the most intellectual people I've ever met have been some of the most stupid from a wider perspective. This is why academia will, and academic science will never understand reality. It can't decode it, can't understand it, because it sees everything as apart from everything else, when really you have to see the connections of everything to see how everything fits together. But these times are amazing. And when you open more and more to consciousness and open the mind to consciousness, then you get closer and closer to that level of ourselves which made the decision to come, which can see the river from source to sea, and then you get a greater and greater idea of why you're here at this time and what it is you're here to do, and the situation, the circumstances that we find ourselves in. Closed minds, open minds, little trite phrases, everyone uses them over and over again, absolutely crucial. Closed mind, control system's got you. Open mind, control system is impotent in your life.
Now, the way we eat, being careful of what we eat, can that help us?
Oh, certainly, because, you know, when you connect the dots, you know, as I do on Saturday over 8 hours, you see that things that appear to have one meaning have very, very different and often very much more profound and deeper meanings. The body computer is an electrochemical organism on one level. It's a vibrational organism, an information construct on its in its base state, and holographic in the way that we experience it in this world. And it's a receiver transmitter of information. Every cell of the body, the membrane of every cell of the body, and we have trillions of them, is a liquid crystal. If you go deep and deep and deeper enough, DNA is crystalline. I sat in a doctor's a clinic in Northern California, and I looked through a microscope at my own blood. And as he increased and increased and increased and increased and increased the power of the magnification, I saw my blood as quartz crystal. And we are crystalline because we are receiver transmitters. What do they use in receiver transmissions and radio, all that stuff? These crystals. And so when all that is working to optimum levels, we can decode reality in a much more deeper, profound way of clarity and expansion than we can if the organism, the receiver transmitter, is in a distorted state. Now, once again, I keep coming back to this. Those in the shadows behind those that we think are in power understand these things, and they are involved in a war on the human body computer system, because they're trying to destabilize it to stop it accessing this new information, this new vibrational awareness that's emerging. And so they pour all this stuff in food, which is destabilizing us, because again, you know, we see chemicals, we see genetically modified food and all that stuff. And we see poisons and pesticides and electromagnetic fields and microwave fields and mobile phone fields. Take all of that back to its prime state, and it's all vibrational information. When you have a virus in your computer, it's rogue information. That's what a virus is in a computer. And as a result, the computer starts to misread information because it's been distorted by the rogue information. If you take the stuff they put into food and drink, etc., the stuff they pour on food when it's growing and all this stuff and fluoride in the water and everything, you take it back to its prime state, you're looking at imbalanced vibrational distorted information fields. And when they enter the body, it distorts the way the body reads information. And as a result of that, we call it mental, emotional, or physical dis-ease, disharmony. That's what's happening. It's actually happening primarily on a vibrational level, and it plays itself through into the holographic and all the rest of it. Now, take one example. They want to keep us asleep. They don't want us to open and expand our minds and our perceptions. And so they're putting fluoride in drinking water. One of the things they did in Nazi Germany was put fluoride in the drinking water of the concentration camps. It makes people docile. It makes people subordinate and acquiesce. And the other thing it does is it calcifies the pineal gland, which along with the pituitary gland and other connections makes up what we call the third eye, the sixth sense and all this stuff. These people, the people putting it in the factories, even people running many of the companies in which it's in, they're not aware of this. Very, very few people need to understand for this to play out across society. How many people actually need to know what the effect of swine flu vaccine is in this year's flu shot, let's call it, in America? How many people need to know? The doctor putting it in your army doesn't need to know. The nurse doesn't need to know. Going right the way through to the manufacturing process, they don't need to know. Only the people that concoct it in the first place and then produce it for the vaccine to be made, they're the only people that need to know. It's tiny, tiny few actually know about all this. And because of the medical schools and all the rest of it all over the world, the doctors are just programmed. They're clueless. They have not got a clue how the body works outside of a tiny, tiny